Rock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Rampage.
Freshly shaved, freshly Dr. Peppered.
Oh, you know I'm chugging a crisp Dr. P over here. Yeah. What is up, Mockstars Nation? Welcome back to the show. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can find us on all podcasting platforms, where you can leave us a five-star review to make us look super-duper cool. Nobody provided proof of their five-star review, so I'm not in space today. But get on there and jump on the Discord. Show your proof of five-star reviews. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead for $3 a month. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. Support the show and drop a deck list on the Discord server. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. That comes with your benefits, too, of the Patreon package. But like Gabe McCoyan, definitely Jeremy, Mono Greg, Reven Lift, UWP Court, Will Rule, Pool Boy Barry, maybe Anthony, and Ryan G. Thank you all for your support. Drop a list in the Discord server like McCoyan, and we are, well, today we're talking about it. So let's get started. Let's jump into the show. By the way, this is the number one show for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. If you didn't know, we also love Don Cheadle. And anything else? What else do we love?
How about the Dyson bladeless fan?
Oh, yeah. This, the soft, consistent breeze of a Dyson bladeless fan. Nothing beats it. All right. We're kicking off today's show because Rampage was just at a tournament and performed admirably. Not to knock his performance, but Rampage and a friend of ours, Jay Brads, they went to a tournament this weekend, and we're going to sort of reflect on how the tournament went, because Rampage, I believe you've had that, what's that thing when you have that moment, you realize everything becomes clear?
And oh, the epiphany.
Yes. Yeah. You've had an epiphany. And
yeah, I did.
Yeah. So kick us off, man. Where was the tournament? What was the name of the tournament? And yeah, how'd it go?
Yeah. So we were at the Pink Bunny Club. That's not a joke. That's the name of the store we were at. It was a smaller tournament. There was only 20 some people there. It was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So we had a few hour drive to get there. Got there, played our games, got paired. We kind of saw this coming. We ended up in the same pods as one another a couple of times. So UWP Quirt was with us, Jay Brads nice. Was with us, and we got to play against both of them in our second and third rounds. We didn't do hot. It wasn't our best showing. There was one I didn't have a choice. I knew I was losing. The second one, we did everything we could, and the guy just had the nuts. That was a rough take. And then there was a game where I had it. It was on board, and I punted. So, you do everything you can, but you get in the moment, you get under the stadium lights, and sometimes it doesn't work out in your favor. So it happens to the best of us. But that's why we go to tournaments, right? These are learning experience. We learn what's good, what doesn't work, what works. I bet I never make the same mistake again. So I'm thankful for it. Even though we all agree that it could have went a little bit better.
Sure. So what are like some of the changes you want to make? Like, I think that's the biggest takeaway from most tournaments is you obviously see a lot, right? You play probably 5 or 6 games of competitive Magic. It's taxing. Yes. But you learn a lot. But in your list, or actually leading up to the tournament, like, did you make any changes to your list that you felt like would give you a better shot?
Nope. I kept it exactly the same. I was pretty confident in my build. I hadn't got a whole lot more reps on it where I could have, seen something. I could have been in a game state where I'm like, oh, this card doesn't do what I thought it did. So I get my list exactly the same. It's what I liked. It's what I was comfortable with. But now exiting the tournament, I realized the deck has to do different things. Last week we talked about alternative methods. What happens if your Tayom gets draped? I should have listened. I was part of the podcast and I didn't listen. I don't know what's going on in my head. There needs to be other stuff going on. There was one point in one of my games where a Clarion Conqueror, Tayom's arch nemesis, was on the battlefield, and I was sitting on my hands again, and that's never a good feeling.
You can't do anything with that thing out. Literally right. Zero things. But no, if y'all missed last week's episode, not only did we talk about that stuff, but we also completely tore apart those pizza lands from TMNT. So if you want to hear our opinion on those god awful pizza lands, check out last week's episode.
So yeah. I want to do more. I felt like my options are either do Broodlord lines or do Hulk lines. I'm leaning towards Hulk because of the triggered ability nature of some of those combos. I don't have to do activated abilities. I'm not reliant on all of my creatures being active. It seems to do a lot, and it gives you flexibility with things inside of the strategy that already work.
Yeah.
So why not give it a shot?
Yeah.
If I can't get the Hulk stuff to work, if it doesn't do what I want it to do, I'm thinking about pivoting to like a Timna Thrasios deck. I just like, because those decks give you so many avenues to pivot on. You always kind of got to be thinking on your toes with like what you can Thrasios activation for, and what you're going to court a calling for. And are we doing Cradle Cloud of Fairy stuff, you know?
Right.
And understanding all the different avenues that deck can go has me interested. It's not just a good stuff pile. There's definitely great stuff in there, but it's not so much A plus B. It's how can I get all of these things to work together in an interesting way?
Yeah, like those, I think we can all agree that when you talk about partner decks, you're talking about the best cards in Magic all in one pile. And like when you play these build around decks, like I know that Jay Brad's is on the Gitrog Monster and you're on Tayom, and even UWP Court is on Child of Alara. These are decks that are complete because they are unique. They're build arounds. And the best that we can do with these off meta commanders is bank on the value that the best cards in Magic give us, right? You can't just throw the best cards of Magic into a pile with that as the commander and hope for the best. Sometimes somebody might get lucky, but you just have to pick a commander that sort of synergizes with some of the best cards in Magic. Or, you know, like it's kind of tough to explain, but like when you build out your strategy for something in Jeskai, that's not, you know, like I remember when Jessica Ishai was actually like a competitive deck, but yeah, sure. You would just throw literally the best Jeskai cards in there. And then you had Underworld Breach, Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond, Brain Freeze, Savine's Reclamation, Intuition. And then the whole deck was just built around like drawing cards and developing value and then generating infinite mana and playing Jeskai infinite times and blowing the table up, right? You could just play the best cards to do that through like Underworld Breach. Now, when you decide to play something like Kaikar at a competitive level, that's a complete build around. You know, there's no taking that. The ceiling is capped. But I feel your pain on like playing Tayom, where there are so many toys and it feels like the ceiling for Tayom is limitless. But decks like Timna Thrasios, decks like Blue Farm, decks like, they have so much card advantage in the command zone, and then just the commanders being split and basically unpunished by commander tax, which was something that UWP Corp brought up in the Discord server about, like, as soon as, if you're playing partners, as soon as you play one of the partners, it should immediately cost two more mana for the second partner. like that being like a rule change. I don't think that'll ever happen, but and it probably will never happen. But that's like there is an advantage to be had there as well. So
sure. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought process for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But so you guys going into the tournament, before off record, before we started recording today, you were talking about working with J-Brads on the Gitrog Monster. And the Gitrog Monster is like a fleshed out list, like forever and ever and ever. It's just been this like figured out list. You know what lines you're going to run, and everyone knows it's Dakmor Salvage. Everyone knows it's, you know, it's dredging, it's Life from the Loam, it's all these things. But J-Brads has turned it into something different. And you guys worked on it all the night before. Like, yep. What was the thought process in like making the changes that you did?
So we got to one point and he was already on the Sylvan Safekeeper, and he was on an Amulet of Vigor. He was on two cards that Lumra loves.
Right.
He was already playing them. So I made the kind of an offhanded comment once upon a time. I'm like, you should just make it a Lumra list and try to do Lumra stuff under Gitrog. Imagine you're playing Lumra, the CDH commander, but now you get to add Black Tutors to it.
Mm-hmm.
What would that do for you? And he put a message out there. He goes, hey, you want to take a peek at my list? And I saw a Lumra in there, and I'm like, son of a bitch, he did it. You know, he's trying the strategy. Let's give it a whirl. So we looked in there and we dug, and, you know, basically we just went through the list and we questioned every card. Why is this here? What does it do? How does it facilitate your strategy? And if it didn't do everything we wanted it to do, we cut it and we put something else in, and we probably iterated on 20, 30 cards to get it where it is. So it's still Gitrog. It's still powerful. You're still trying to go fast and frog. If you have the cards in hand to get you discard outlet, Dredgeland, great. You've won the game. If not, based on your opener, if you got a good opener that can play into the mid range, then we kind of pivot into the Lumra strategy. And that was the one thing we probably discussed the most, was looking at your opening hands and figuring out what kind of game you're going to play.
Yeah, and this was something that we discussed last week, too, is like these are, and kind of said it earlier, these are decks that require the commander, and you do need alternate routes. So it's cool that you guys found an alternate route with Lumra to be like, no, this can win the game on its own. So you should, if you see it in your hand, you should lean into it.
He's already wanting to play a lot of lands for the Gitrog, just like Lumra wants to do. Like, it was a perfect fit. In building, we kind of got to the discussion about redundancy when it comes to win cons. And that's kind of what I wanted to explore today, using this list as like the jumping off point, because we approached this problem while we were discussing the list. We asked the question, how many win cons is too many win cons? In my TAM list, I play a Orcish Bowmaster and a Marionette Apprentice. So once I'm doing my TAM loops, as long as I have one of those around, I can loop them infinitely and kill the table. That's great. I love that.
Yep.
The game I won in the tournament like a month ago, my Orcish Bowmaster got exiled under a Ragavan. It was gone forever. So I needed that redundant piece to still win. When we're looking at the Gitrog list, we ask the same question. So what's your final win? What's your payoff? Right now, J-Brads is on Torment of Hailfire and Bitter Ordeal. So he goes through his dredge loops. He's repeatedly casting Dark Ritual, shuffling with the Titans, shuffling his graveyard, and recasting the Dark Ritual to make infinite mana. And then he can either win with the Torment of Hailfire for X equals a billion, or Bitter Ordeal his opponents, pass the turn, and then he'll win due to their deck out. Both work. Both are fine. But we were considering Charm, Ebony Charm. The one mana instant. And the reason it's important is because it can deal damage and instant speed. So while you're doing like end step loops, you can cast this Ebony Charm over and over. and deal one damage and gain a life and just repeat that process like you were doing with the Dark Ritual.
Yep. For those watching us, for those watching us on YouTube, I don't have it on screen, but it is a very good card.
So there are three potential win cons we could add in this deck. Only one of them works in the Gitrog end step, pulling back from the cleanup step, triggers on the stack, end of turn effects resolve, so you can finally deal damage, you know. That Ebony Charm works great. The Torment of Hailfire and the Bitter Ordeal either require a main phase activation or something like a emergence zone to let you do all of that at instant speed. So they kind of need more setup. And we're discussing what's best and what's worst. What works under an opponent having a One Ring live? Like, Torment of Hailfire still kills under a Torment of Hailfire, whereas a Bitter Ordeal doesn't, where an Ebony Charm doesn't. Bitter Ordeal can be played for value. Imagine a world where your Gravestorm count is like 7. You know, that's your normal Gitrog turn. And now your Gravestorm count is 7, and you can just pop, pop, pop the Thassa's Oracle, the Underworld Breach, and some other win con out of all of your opponent's libraries. And now, how do they win? Now you've just given yourself infinitely more time. So you don't need to Bitter Ordeal for the win. You can Bitter Ordeal for value. So we're looking at these cards and, you know, what wins and what doesn't. And the question came up, and what I would like your opinion on is how many win cons is too many? How many should we be banking on? And does it depend on the deck?
Yeah. I think you need at least 2, right? Like, I don't think that 3 is too many, but it also depends on the build. Like, but 2 is what you can't go in with 1. Like, I'm sorry for all of you out there who have 1 win con. It's just not realistic. You are asking for your win con to be pinned under a Ragavan. You're asking for Itali to steal your win condition. Like, that is the risk you run by having. And now with the prevalence of Itali, it's like, yeah, there is a decent chance that at least one of my win conditions is stolen to Itali. So that's... that's kind of where I stand on it, is where, like, you need at least 1. The thing I love about having 2 or more is usually the win cons are incredible cards, right? They're really great cards that synergize with multiple different strategies. So, I mean, in this case, like with the Bitter Ordeal, you can Bitter Ordeal. This card's amazing. If you have never seen or played with Bitter Ordeal before, it is 2 and a black for a sorcery that says search target player's library for a card and remove that card from the game. Then that player shuffles their library, and it has Gravestorm, which is a 1-time, maybe 2-time now printed effect. This card's from Future Sight. So when you play this spell, copy it for each permanent put into a graveyard this turn. You may choose new targets for the copies. It's crazy. It's insane. So in Gitrog Monster, the whole strategy is to, when you go through your loops, your dredge loops, you're recycling your library or your graveyard back in your library with like Kozilek or Ulamog. So even if you Bitter Ordeal for value, it just goes to your graveyard unless there's some sort of Dothi Voidwalker effect out there. But like, it just goes to your graveyard for you to loop it back into your deck to win with later. So like, it becomes an even better card for you, like in this case. So I do think it's amazing here. The one thing I was going to make for Ebony Charm too, is this is a win condition, but it is also value, because this gets around with the One Ring in some ways, but not the win the game way. But I do think there's real value in the exile up to 3 cards from a single graveyard. Like, for 1 black mana, you can save the game from being lost. So with a Underworld Breach on the stack, with, you know, something that, yeah, would end the game from the graveyard, boom, it's helpful. It kills Taeom. Like, it's a Taeom killer. So I do think that redundancy is necessary to an extent. You get in Gitrog Monster, you need at least 2. But 1 is already redundant in a way, because if you end up going through your loops, you can just recycle the 1 over and over and over again. But you run the risk. Like the thing is that Gearbog Monsters loop is based on one card. It's based on Dakmor Salvage. They're never going to print another dredge land because it would just break this deck in half. But you get Dakmor Salvage, and then every time you discard it to whatever discard outlet he plays, then he gets the dredge two because the Gearbog Monster sees the discard. So if you exile the Dakmor Salvage, the game's still not over because of his redundancy, because he's also playing Rift Sweeper. Just for the off chance that someone steals or takes the Dakmor. So I do think that he's been punished. I think that's how you learn the best, right? You get punished. You get punished for not being redundant, you know, enough, or you get punished because someone knows what you're doing, or you get punished because someone bitter ordeals you. You know, they know what your deck's trying to do. So it's necessary. So I'm gonna go back to my original answer. I think two win conditions is ideal. Three, if you're in partner land. If you're in partner land, I think you can run three.
Sure, just because you have all the different modes of those cards and when they can come up. I'm on board for
that. Yeah, they're not limited to a particular strategy where like Gearbog Monster's completely limited to making that Dakmor Salvage like happen. Like those partner commanders are just like, yeah, I'm going to hit you with two creatures and draw two cards. You know, it's like you cast your second spell, I'll draw a card. Sweet. Like they're just there to see more information, where you have to put things together to see information with these other off meta commanders. So with Teom, your redundancy dilemma, do you feel like you have enough redundancy, or do you feel like because you have been pursuing the Devoted Druid lines like pretty aggressively that you're lacking the redundancy, so you basically only have one line?
Right, I agree. Yeah, if I ever lose Devoted Druid, I don't know what I do. But pray we go to time, I think.
that is an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, pray we go to time. Pray I get the draw.
So that's why I want to start looking into the Protean Halt stuff. I think that'll be good. It doesn't mean that my TAM was bad or wrong. Sometimes, you know, you drink Dr. Pepper Zero your whole life, and then you switch to Dr. Pepper Zero Cherry. You know, it doesn't mean that the original Dr. Pepper is wrong or bad. It's you're trying something new. You're trying to figure it out. Give it a test. See how you like it. See if it grows on you.
I approve of this message.
Yeah,
it's a great analogy. So yeah, I can't wait to see what your list looks like with a little bit of Hulk going into it. If you guys missed my list from last week, you can check out that episode. But I love the way that Hulk works with so many like strategies that I like, especially since I'm an Enchantress player. You get Animate Dead, you know, Dance of the Dead, and Necromancy. So with a deck that automatically wants to like sort of fill the grave, it just makes sense that if you're going to play Hulk lines, you sort of incorporate those reanimation effects that are so low to the ground, because Teom, they're permanents that Teom can grab. So you really get a 2-for-1. With reanimation spells. And sometimes you can actually get an even bigger pull off of it if you go for Renegade Rallier, because he has Revolt. If you had a non-land permanent, leave the battlefield. So you can grab a Renegade Rallier, and then if you've met the conditions, he'll grab the Animate Dead, pull it back to the battlefield, and you pull another creature back. Ba-ba-ba-boom! Maybe a card to consider. Anyway.
Think that would be good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to try. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, this week on the Discord server, we had one of our patrons, Mac Oyen, drop his command or his new list. Or this is his first list. So it's not a new list, but it's his first list he's been consistently working on. And it's Kyler, Sigardian Emissary. And he calls the deck Frat Boys. And the flavor of the deck is it is all humans. and it there is no fudging with it. You like the deck is it's human, kindred humans, and that's the way it's got to be. So we went through the deck and picked out some cards that we really love, and then picked out some cards that for humans we really think deserve to make the cut. And also on the Discord server, I dropped my own list here as well. So I have some. I think this isn't necessarily to say that like what I did to the list is an improvement to the deck. It's more just my style and how I like to build, but it doesn't make the deck any better. So, yeah, let's jump into the list. We'll go through both lists here in a sec and talk about some of these cards that really shine in Kyler, Sigardian Emissary, which if you're unfamiliar, Kyler's 5 mana, 3 green and a white for a human cleric. He's a 2/2 right away. But whenever another human enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Kyler. Other humans you control get +1/+1 for each counter on Kyler. So, yeah, the dude wants to see humans entering the battlefield because he just gets bigger and he makes them bigger in return. So it makes sense to want to jam it just full and just make sure that you can benefit it from Kyler as much as possible. So cards that stand out to you right away, what are you seeing?
Having been fortunate enough to play against the deck a few times, we have the Dr. Pepper 2/3 all-star, the Augur of Autumn. I love this card. I love seeing it in decks. I love seeing it played.
Part of me feels like he's just playing it for you.
And you know what? That would be awesome. I would genuinely appreciate that because I love this card. I love everything it does. And the fact that it's a human is just a cherry on top. Another card I liked, sleeper pick, I didn't know existed until I reviewed the Kyler list, was Katilda, Dawnheart Prime.
Yes.
Turning humans into dorks seems like such a good idea.
And has very relevant text, protection from werewolves.
Yep, that comes up in at least all of my games. And then the last one is the Horn of Gondor. I want to highlight this little gift we got. Hold on, I'm pulling up the list here.
Lord of the Rings.
From Lord of the Rings. Puts in a lot of work. It can trigger your Kyler and then explode your Kyler once you have five humans on board. You get 5 more humans entering the battlefield. So all of them are 20/20s by that point. You have a thick line of frat boys standing there.
Yeah. So yeah, you get 5 triggers off Kyler. He gets 5 more counters. He's bigger. The whole board is bigger. Yeah. This feels like the exponential growth card. Like if you see this land, it's like that's when the alarm bells should be going off.
Like there's a world where you live that turn, maybe, but you're not getting another turn after that.
No, the clock is ticking. Yep. So like when I went through this list, Max list, I really love some of these dorks I didn't know about. Like I think we all know about Somberwold Sage. The card's great. It's a human druid for 3 mana, 0/1, that says you can tap it, add 3 mana of any one color, spend this mana only to cast creature spells. So it's one way to like, yeah, you land this on turn 2 if you drop an Avacyn's Pilgrim, and then all of a sudden Kyler's out on turn 3 and you're building, you're already wide. Like you already have two humans out there that can start catching counters then on the following turn. So really great mana dork. But then I saw Harrenblade Elite and I was like, what is this? It's also 2 green, but it's a 1/1 with vigilance. Whenever another human enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Harrenblade Elite. So very similar effect to Kyler, right? Well, I'm pretty sure it comes in the same precon, but you can also tap to add X mana of any one color, where X is Heronblade Elite's power. This is where I love the card, because it doesn't just care about the number of counters on it, where some cards like Kyler do, where it's like you get plus one for each counter on it, not plus one for Kyler's power. This is like, no, this feeds off Kyler, where Kyler's like, yeah, hey, get bigger, buddy. Keep tapping for more mana. I love that in the deck. And then when Final Fantasy was spoiled, there was the Commander deck with counters based around Final Fantasy X and Maester Seymour, which, if you've never played Final Fantasy X, great game. Maester Seymour is a dick. But for two and a green, he's a 1/3. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a number of plus one counters equal to Maester Seymour's power on another target creature you control. So if this is just existing, when Kyler lands on the battlefield, you move to combat, Maester Seymour puts a plus one counter on Kyler, and it makes the whole board bigger. Now, let's just theorize, all right, that Maester Seymour comes down after Kyler, and you've already had a couple triggers. Now, Maester Seymour is probably like a 6/8, and then you put six more counters on Kyler, and then it doubles. It just takes the whole game over. So that's, I love that there. It's so much stronger than something like Luminarch Aspirant, which is like a staple, I think, in a lot of people's Kyler decks, because it's as human as well. But this is just, this is much, much better than that. For one more mana, just rewind, listen to what I just said, and then think about it. This goes in the deck. This, every Kyler deck you build in the future, this goes in it. It's that good. And then there's a card that was in it that I loved enough, or at least I felt like it was a soul card for Mac, which may or may not be Mac. You're going to have to clear that up for me. But for 4 and a white, it's an uncommon from Theros Beyond Death. 4 and a white, human soldier, Reverent Hoplite. It's a 1/2 that says, when it enters, create a number of 1/1 human soldier creature tokens equal to your devotion to white. I think this is, it's like a finisher for the deck. So I can't remember. I don't think I cut it. I think I still have it. But I felt like that was just like one of those cards. Uncommons barely ever see play. And the fact that this can come in and win you the game, I think that's just, that's a win. It's a flavor win. It's a dunk on your opponents. And I love the card. So, or at least in this particular build, I love this card. Yeah, and then so Mac changed his list a little bit since we talked about it. He put Lurking Predators in there. I put that in my list too. I think it's so good. Right now, with how big mana gets in Magic, like so quickly, I think that Lurking Predators should be something that people in green should be considering more often. Sure. So if you're out there and you're looking at it, if you're looking at six mana, I don't know if it'll do enough. Hey, three players are going to have their turns and they're all going to cast spells. Trust me, yeah. You're going to get something from it.
Well, and it helps with the problem we talked about with this deck of, you know, I can cast a thing that makes a bunch of dudes, that makes my board huge, but none of them have haste. And I don't really want to play like Concordant Crossroads or something that might turn my opponent's stuff on.
Right.
I want that can give just my board haste. And Lurking Predators kind of does that, right? Your humans are still going to enter on other people's turns. They're going to enter the battlefield. They're going to trigger Kyler. They're going to make everything big. And then once you untap, they're ready to go. So I think it's a cool add.
Yeah, it just has like, yeah, it's like the unseen utility right there. It's like you said, pseudo haste. I didn't even think about that. And then, so I'm popping over to my list now. When I went through Mac's list, I really liked a lot of what he was doing, and I just kind of took my experience. I did leave the Reverent Hoplite in, just so we know. I took my experience with like CDH, and obviously this is a Selesnya shell, so I wanted to put as many enchantments as I could in here. Destiny Spinner is an enchantment creature that's also a human. Shout, huge shout. But there are just a few here's the thing. When it comes to humans, there are a million. There are a million. And when I was digging, I thought this is an easy upgrade. Like, this is an easy deck. go through, upgrade it, no problem. And then I started looking and I was just like, geez, there's no way to pick a line. There are no line. Like, it's, you can go anywhere with it. It's that wide. We're in, like, I can't believe in Selesnya, when you have just humans to choose from, usually that constraint is enough to just, you can see the strategy clearly, you can pick it, you can refine it, and end up with the end product. This took me so long. It was such a project. All week I was brewing this thing. So a few cards that I put in there that I thought were really great were I don't even know how to say this. Biophagus. It's, yep. Yeah. One in a green, human Tyranid Wizard. This is from the Warhammer decks. It's a 1/3 that says you can tap for one mana of any color. This mana is spent to cast a creature spell. That creature enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So immediately helps Kyler. So I thought that was an easy upgrade. Like, for two mana, I think it's the second cheapest dork in the deck. Believe it or not, there's only one mana human mana dork, and that's Avacyn's Pilgrim. And then as I was like continuing down, I kept Augur of Autumn because in my mind, this is like the card advantage engine for the deck. And there's going to be so many creatures. You're going to have creatures with, you know, three different powers almost instantly with how many creatures are in the deck. So I think this is really good. So that this thing provides so much advantage, I couldn't say no to it. But when I'm thinking about like building a deck, I'm like, okay, we got to get mana. We got to get off the ground. And then when we get off the ground, we have to make those plays mean something. So I was thinking about legendary creatures and the number of legendary creatures that are in the deck. And it's actually pretty easy to achieve. But there's this card from Final Fantasy. It's called Seraphirin. And it's one, a green, and a white for a legendary human citizen, a 2/2 that says the first legendary creature spell you cast each turn costs 2 less to cast. At the beginning of combat in your turn, if you control 2 or more legendary creatures, you may transform Seraphirin. And it transforms into an artifact that gains evasion, so it will stay on the board, that says the first legendary creature you spell you cast costs 2 less to cast, and then legendary creatures you control get +2/+2. So an additional buff, and if Kyler gets removed, it comps for the tax right away. It gets Kyler down earlier, and then it comps for the tax later if people are able to get it off the board. And then I went back to the well. Elavir is a human. Boom. Easy. Citizen Champion is a human. Whenever an enchantment enters, you draw a card and put a +1/+1 counter on Citizen Champion. Awesome. My goal after a while was to see how complex I could make the mathematics.
We're gonna add 1/1 counters to some of the stuff all of the time. Yes.
And then this new card from Spider-Man, which I was actually stoked to see that it existed. I wasn't really kind of, I didn't want to like anything from Spider-Man, but Spider-Man Miles Morales might be the best green finisher for go wide decks that I've seen in a long, long time. It's for 6 mana. It is a spider human hero with vigilance and trample. It's a 5/5. Whenever Spider-Man enters or attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on each other creature you control. Those creatures gain trample until end of turn. So it's insane because your board is going to be so wide. You're going to have like Kyler there. It puts counters on Kyler when it enters. So he's going to gain trample on that turn, and then also when it comes back around, if Spider-Man's still there, it's like it's going to continue putting counters on things and pressuring life totals. And with the build of the deck, I feel like it's just enough, you know, it'll be enough when the time comes. One card I'm looking to cut though is pure imaginative pure. Rascal. I don't think it does enough anymore, right, as much as it used to. So yeah, kind of one of those things I'm looking to cut. But yeah, as I went through the list, I pretty much kept the same interaction suite, except I added one of my favorite cards of all time. Have you ever heard of a card called Rite of Harmony?
I haven't. Tell me more.
Green and a white instant. It says, whenever a creature or enchantment enters the battlefield under your control this turn, draw a card. So it's kind of insane in this deck where your whole goal is just keep dropping creatures, right? So, and also at instant speed, if you have Lurking Predators or whatever, and you know someone's going to have a big turn, you can cast that Rite of Harmony and just allow them to fire off spells or even prevent them from firing off spells. And then you
can hold off. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really love Rite of Harmony because it can just reload your hand as you're casting creature spells for such a low entry point. And then I didn't see Mac have a great hinge in his deck, but I felt like it was almost necessary here with how many creatures are dropping. And then there's one card in Standard right now I really love too. It's Collector's Cage. One in a white in Commander, and especially in Kyler, it's just so good. One in a white has Hideaway 5, so you could potentially get a nuclear bomb underneath this thing, like Spider-Man. And then for one colorless mana and tap it, you can put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. And it sort of has that coven text that then if you control three creatures with three different powers, you may play the exiled card without it paying its mana cost. So I think that is a really great way. You can land it. It could, you know, stow away something for later. And then when Kyler drops, it can just keep piling the counters on. Like, I think that's sort of necessary in the deck a little bit. But, running out of breath.
Hey, you're doing great. I love your list. One of the first things I looked for based on how you build decks, I scrolled as fast as I could. These are all alphabetized. I looked, I'm like, I wonder if you put a Sanctum Weaver in here.
It's not a human, dude.
Not a human. Can't do it.
And it actually made me pull this Sarah Sanctum too. I had the Sarah Sanctum in there because I really wanted that to happen. But actually, it's a good turning point to talk about lands right now, because there are lands out there that were recently released, and I know we may have forgotten about them because they just came out in, oh God, what's that set called? The one
Edging
in Space. Oh yeah. Edging in Eternity. But there are these lands that have this crazy ability called Station. And if I'm going to be specking, this isn't financial advice.
It is a little bit.
But it's not, for legal reasons. I would be specking so hard on Evendo right now. I would be specking super hard on Evendo, Adagia, and pretty much all of them but the red one, right? Like Uthros, yep. And then what's the black one? I can't remember.
One does.
We'll find it. But anyway, all these station lands have so much value to be had, where in Commander, a lot of times, this is why I value haste so much, is because, and this is why I think Evendo and Adagia and Uthros are so good, because not many people play haste creatures. Like, and haste enablers are often, like, they're few and far between. So you can play your creatures, and as long as the board state doesn't dictate that you'll die on your following turn, just tap Station. The value you get from stationing is so much greater than the punch you're going to take from 2/2s or whatever. Just do it. Get the station, right? Because you potentially get a Guy's Cradle. You potentially get the ability to copy or create a token that's a copy of target artifact or enchantment you control, which can be huge, especially when you're playing something like Doubling Season, right? Can you imagine playing a Doubling Season and then creating a token copy and getting two more Doubling Seasons? And then what? The math would be impossible. You get really hard. That was my goal. So and then with Uthros as well, artifacts are so prevalent, especially when you build around them. And then it's killing me. I can't remember what the name of it is, but, the black station land, it allows you to sacrifice a creature and then draw cards equal to its power. So there's so much upside with these. I would just be Like right now, an Evendo is going for $20. Kind of worth it. Uthros going for $18. Kind of worth it. Adagia is the next one, going for $11. Worth it. Absolutely worth it. And then Susura Sukundi. That's the name of the. That's the name of the house.
Okay, yep, that's what I thought.
Susura Sukundi, Void Altar, is pay two, tap it, pay two life, sacrifice a creature, draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature's power. Boom, card draw. Attach to this. Bada bing, bada boom. It's awesome. And everyone looked at it as like a downside that they entered tapped. I don't think that's necessarily a downside. Like, yeah, you can't tap for mana. It's fine. Yeah. Rampage, what are your thoughts on these station? Anything with station, really?
Well, okay. So especially for this deck, I definitely had the thought going through the list. Like Magus of the Candelabra feels really good here.
Ooh,
the human?
Yeah.
Once we get Kyler out, all the cards I've thought of in ways of improving this have been like low drops. What I want to do is get Kyler out there and then cast like two or three or four value pieces, one drops, two drops, three drops that just do stuff and then are incidentally 7/7s, 8/8s throughout the game that you can really hit home with.
Right.
And one of the ones I highly considered for this deck was Magus of the Candelabra, because we're on Growing Rites, we're on Evendo, we're on Cradle. You could even go crazy. You could be on Sarah Sanctum in this deck. There's a three tree city. I just think it's a good add for this list. I'm a big fan of the Evendo. I got to play a game in the Mockstars Discord. Come join us. We play all the time. Where my Evendo was tapping for huge chunks of mana to the point where I got to play Ancient Adamantoise in my Volo deck. If you're unfamiliar, Ancient Adamantoise deflects all the damage that would be dealt to me onto the turtle. And once it dies, it makes me a bunch of treasures. I think it's got like a 20 butt onto it. And that felt so good. It felt gross. I was untouchable and the threat. It's the feeling of power. And it was all due to the Evendo. It took me two turns to get it going. And it was still worth it.
Yeah. Gosh. That's crazy. Yeah, tap this and you're over halfway there. That's a sexy line. Like that.
So I guess with the Evendo, with all the tap lands, like you were saying, everyone's saying, you know, they're tapped, they don't do anything first turn, great. You know, neither did my Scry land. It didn't do anything the first turn it came out either. But the value you're gonna get down the road with this Evendo is gonna be much greater.
Yeah, to jump back to the humans deck, with how many effects there are, like, I think that even if you're going to run these station lands, if you run Thalia, Heretic Cathar, where your creatures enter tapped, just that should put you in a peace of mind, right? Where it's like, oh, the creatures my opponent's control are entering tapped, or like, the one mana enchantment that I love so much enters creatures your opponent's control enter tapped, and you gain a life for each creature that enters the battlefield under your opponent's control.
Authority of Councils?
Yes, Authority. Yeah. Like, even if you played that or whatever and you start gaining life off of those things, it'll put you at ease. You can reliably station your lands to go for crazy, crazy upside. So there's so much upside to be had with these station lands that they are no brainers. Also, if you guys want, if you're listening to this and you're playing green, or you're playing, honestly, if you're not even playing green, in my humble opinion, my very humble, humble opinion, I don't think any commander deck should be over 30 lands unless you are land fall focused. So if you're in green, what's that?
That's a hot take.
It's super hot. I'm telling you, years of experience have led me to this conclusion. But if you are in green, like, go down to 30 lands, 34, like that's what Mac's at right now. Mac, this is you will discover the way. You will see the light eventually. Go to 30, add a wild growth, add a Utopia Sprawl, add a Lotus Petal, add one more artifact that taps for mana. Trust me. Just trust me. And then go ahead and add a couple more dorks, right? That wild growth is going to take you, is going to get you to the promised land. You know, yes, you're going to have to mulligan a few more times because you're not going to see as many lands as you normally would like. But you, when you hit it and you get the lands you're looking for and you get the card draw engines that you're looking for set up, the cards that you draw will be more meaningful instead of just flooding out. You will flood out. If flooding out is a problem you have, you're going to flood out way less. If you go down to 30 or even, I think I kept this, I'm at 29 on the humans deck. And honestly, I would probably want to go to 28. If I could abandon the human like constraint to this, I'd put a Sanctum Weaver in there and take a land out, you know, like, and the deck would function the same or if not better. So, it's just about knowing what you're comfortable taking as you're mulliganing, right? So, when you see your first seven, can I play two or three cards in my hand? Yes, go for it. Do some of those cards draw me cards or give me mana, give me more mana? Awesome. You're in the right spot. So just something to try out, something to test out. If you are uncomfortable doing so, take just one land at a time. But first thing you do, take a forest out and put a wild growth in. Next thing, take a plains out, put a Utopia Sprawl in. You'll get there, I promise you. That's my spiel.
And the Utopia Sprawl and the Wild Growth make your Magus of the Candelabra better. So I support this as well.
Yes. They make your Sanctum Weaver better. They make your Sarah Sanctum better. They make your Magus of the Candelabra better. They make your Candelabra of Taunos better. So yeah, just, you know, it's one of those things. Just do it. Trust me. I'm winking at the camera. If you're on YouTube, you can see it. See my pretty face and my mustache. All right. Rampage.
Yeah.
We're getting to the end here. Are there... Oh. Yeah. But we're not done. We're getting to the end. But we are not done because there is probably the... Like, when we first drew up the show, this is way, way back when the Mock Stars were being conceptualized. I created a show doc, right? I created a show doc so that we could duplicate it. And then, you know, every episode we have like something to go through. Obviously, that's not how things have gone over the years, right? But Rampage, I shared the doc with him this last week. He went in and... in the top five plays of the week section, so if you're playing a lot of games, this happened, like you're seeing a lot of things happen. This is just the number one play, I think. There is a number one play here. I'm excited to go through this section. Finally, we get to do it. We're doing it. Rampage, are you so excited now that I've preempted that?
I am so excited. I got to be a part of this game and, when whatever happened, which I'm about to describe, happened, my face, which you can now see if you're watching us on YouTube, I was so incredibly excited. I get to play against UWP Court quite often, his Child of Alara deck. Its whole thing is stacks until it can hit Alara and then wipe the board, start over. You have 4 mana. Court has 8-10 mana. He's just going to be ahead of you. And he's going to keep that loaded gun of Alara on the battlefield, where if you get out of control, he's just going to sack it again. So I in the tournament this week, I mentioned I got to play a game. It was Court in position one, me in seat two, and then a stranger, our opponent playing Glarb in seat three. It was a 3-pod. I tried to get out early, as did the Glarb. Neither of us got there. Once Alara hit, wiped the board. We kind of know how this goes. in fourth swing attempt, as he's building the board, I believe there was a last march of the ends. They got a whole bunch of folks out there. They're swinging. They're ready to attack. Through the progress, as the game progressed, one of the cards on Quirt's board was an opposition agent. The opposition agent got to watch our third opponent crack an Urza Saga. The search is mandatory, so Quirt got to look through his deck, look through his hand, saw that our third opponent had a very scary hand, like win potential in hand, even without a board. So he got really scared, and he swung his whole board at the Glarb player to try to kill him, knock him out. The Glarb player had like necropotence, so he was down to less than 10 life. And this was definitely lethal. And I don't know if you've heard of this card, but it is called Legolas's Quick Reflexes. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Menace, I hope you can pull it up on screen to show everyone what this does. The gist is it untaps a permanent you control. And once that creature permanent becomes tapped again, I think it has to be a creature, it deals damage to another target creature. So it's kind of like a mini fight spell. It really doesn't ever come up. People really abuse the untap piece of it or the hexproof piece. It delivers that.
Rarely does the tap deal damage thing come into play. Except for in this instance.
Unless you're a Glarb player and your commander has Death Touch. So with lethal on board swinging at him, the third opponent, Legolas's Quick Reflexes, his Glarb, untaps it. The Glarb player taps it to surveil two. And when it becomes tapped, the delayed trigger goes on the stack for Glarb to deal damage to something. Could be anything. And he targets the Alara, killing the Alara with the death touching damage. Alara triggers and wipes Chris board. And now we have to start over one more time, starting this game over with no permanents that Art lands left on the battlefield. It was so awesome. It felt good. I've been a victim of Alara too many times. And to see Quirt get got by his own Alara,
yes.
There. And I stared at our opponent with disbelief. It was so awesome to see.
You probably had the biggest smile on your face.
It was insane.
Because it's like, oh my God. Like this deck, and I'm telling you, out there in CDH world, look at me. Dead in the eye, dead in the mustache. Look at me, okay? This deck shouldn't work. But it does. Okay? It just does. He plays 10 bounce lands. He plays all the bounce lands he can. He plays exploration, and he just if you let the game go too long, I'm sorry, you're gonna get mad. It works. Okay, so, and his whole thing is that the game goes long enough, and then he holds you hostage, he wipes all your card advantage, and then he starts to take over, and it's through big chunky dudes like and monsters, and Last March of the Ents is like his trump card. Like it is, that is his thing, where once he plays that, everyone picks it up, they scoop because the game's over. Now this is the most amazing get got moment that I've ever heard of. Now UWP Quirt goes on to still win this game, but a big part of me wished that he didn't. Sorry, Chris, but no, I wish you didn't, because I just wanted to see him get got. Like, I have never. That is the biggest. It would have been the most, like, insane blowout I've ever seen in my life. Like, to Last March of the Ents, drop your whole hand, drop basically all the creatures you need to end the game on the board, and then you just get sniped. Sniped by a quick reflex to your own Alara that nuclear, like, detonates your whole board. Like, that's, if he didn't win the game, I wished that would have been a clear sign to be like, oh, I can hurt myself. It would finally click, but it didn't quick because he still won. So.
That was cool. I saw him do the Legolas. I'm like, oh, he wants another surveil. Like, he's dead. You know, played her out. Hey, good on ya. And he goes, I'll just deal the damage to Alara.
Spectacular.
No, it was good. It was fun.
Yes.
It was a good game. There was good back and forth. And so, yeah, Court pulled it out in the end for sure.
Nice. Yeah. Like I said, out there in CDH land, you think it doesn't work. You see it come to the table. You see it in the command zone and you disregard it completely. That is not a deck. This guy likes the deck a lot. He's not serious. And then you see him play Root Maze and Bounce Lands and you go, what is happening?
One of Court's games, he went turn one burgeoning. And then on everyone else's turn, bounce land, Lotus Petal, turn two, mana, bought and paid for, Con Sphinx. Landed a turn two Con Sphinx with mana.
Land mana. Oh my God. Oh, it's hilarious. It's awesome. It's a testament to creative deck building. Like, yep. Boom, he did it. He's come down he sees the matrix. Okay, all right, that was a very satisfying, it's not the top five, but that is the top one play of the week for sure. So if you have any top five plays out there and you want to share them with us, leave them in the YouTube comments or drop them in the Discord server. Yeah, tell us the story. Like, we want to hear it. And tell that story for you on the platform too. So, Rampage, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Magic's cool and we're having a whole bunch of fun with it. I'm going to be brewing that new TAM. I'm going to be brewing that Timnathras. Jump in the Discord, brew with us. Menace and I love talking decks. So, whatever you have, bring it out. Let us see it.
Yeah, I love putting a Sanctum Weaver in anything. So bring me your craziest deck list that includes green, and I will squeeze it in there. Challenge accepted. So yeah, if you like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. Remember, this is the number one show on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. So bring those crisp 23 flavors to the Discord server as well. Express your love and joy for Magic and or Dr. Pepper. You can also support us on all podcasting platforms, where you can find us and leave us a 5-star review, make us look super duper cool, and also help new people find the show. And you can support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead for $3 a month. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. And support the show. And we really do appreciate it. And if one, you're a patron, or even just joining the Discord server and sharing a cool deck list with us, we are excited to talk about it on the show. So jump on there. Patrons get priority. If you don't know what priority is, I'll share the rules text in the description below. But that's it. This is the Mock Stars Podcast. We're the coolest guys on the internet. So peace. We're out of here.